Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. Leanne Burnham, PhD, is a prostate cancer researcher with a goal of addressing health disparities in Black men and advancing treatment options. But Burnham's story with cancer extends far beyond her inspiring work. Her dad has prostate cancer, and she herself is a survivor of stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma. In this episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast, Burnham discusses the research she's working on to address these health disparities, shares how she was inspired by her father's diagnosis, and details her own survival story. How did you first become involved in the field of prostate cancer health disparities?
Well, my dad was actually diagnosed about a decade ago while I was a pre-med student. And at the time, I didn't know about prostate cancer. Nobody I knew had it. And after he was diagnosed, I started to notice more men in my community were being diagnosed with prostate cancer in their 40s and 50s. And so as part of my training, I wanted to shadow my dad's physicians at Cleveland Clinic, which, you know, they're world renowned for their department of urology. And so I got to see firsthand in the clinic how the disease affected men of different ages, different races. And that really kind of kicked off what I wanted to do after graduating there. And so when I made my next step in my career, which was to go to Loma Linda University at their Center for Health Disparities, I knew that my career trajectory was going to focus specifically on prostate cancer and why it affects certain populations more than others. So my dad, when he was diagnosed, he was, you know, young. He was right around age 50. He was very healthy from the outside looking in. My dad exercised every day. He ate really well. He would shop at the local organic market. You know, he was just the picture of you'll never get sick. And so when he was diagnosed with prostate cancer, he was diagnosed with an aggressive form. So for those who may not be familiar with prostate cancer screening, there's a simple blood test that's done. It's called a PSA test. And anything above 4 is considered to be abnormal. So my dad's was 64 when they found it. And then he went on ahead and had surgery. And, you know, surgery is kind of a major deal, you know, especially if you've never had surgery before. And after surgery, the urologist let us know that they thought they had gotten all of the cancer. But with prostate cancer, what you do is you have to track it for a few months out and look at your PSA levels in your blood to see if it's really all the way gone. Because you know how cancer works, you just need one cell to escape. That's it, you know? And so we found out pretty soon after, you know, 3 to 6 months later that his PSA was rising again, which meant that some of those cancer cells had escaped. And the thing with prostate cancer, you know, and you can look this up according to American Cancer Society and other organizations, if you catch prostate cancer early enough and you catch it when all the cancer is confined within the prostate, then you have over 99% cure rate. But if the cancer cells escape the prostate, which is in the case of my dad, then there is no cure for prostate cancer. So it's very like 100%, 0%. There's nothing in between. But what's great is there are a lot of treatment options that allow men to live, you know, very fulfilling lives for a long time out. You know, my dad has been 10 years since he's been diagnosed. There is no cure for the stage he's at, but he's, you know, from the outside looking in, still healthy. And, you know, I'm feverishly working for a cure along with other scientists and physicians to see, you know, if it gets to that point where there are no medications available for him, that we are already ready to go with the next greatest thing. So that's kind of what drives me every day.
So more on your research, could you elaborate on the main topics your research focuses on, what your goals are, and anything important that you've found that our audience should know about?
Sure. So in looking at prostate cancer health disparities, specifically in Black men, because that's where my research focus is, there are many reasons why that disparity exists in how often men are diagnosed, and then also their survival outcomes as they get the disease. And so it's important to address this from a few different angles. And so at the Division of Health Equities within City of Hope, we look at genetic reasons. So one project that I'm working on right now is looking at a receptor called HER2. You may be familiar with HER2 when you hear about breast cancer, HER2 positive breast cancer. But one thing that we found is that HER2 seems to be expressed it appears to be a gene that's more expressed in Black men, and it's associated with West African ancestry. So that's very interesting because the majority of African Americans in our nation, their DNA ties to the West Coast of Africa. And so that's a genetic reason why prostate cancer may be more aggressive, and we can't change our DNA, you know? So it's important when you can find these genetic biomarkers that you can create treatments that can target that genetic variant and, you know, hopefully improve outcomes. We also look at diet and lifestyle. And so we know that there's a link between vitamin D deficiency and a lot of diseases. We've seen that, you know, this past year, even with COVID. And so there is a link between vitamin D deficiency and prostate cancer tumor aggressiveness. And why that's important for men with prostate cancer is vitamin D is synthesized in our bodies depending on the sunlight that we receive and how it's able to penetrate our skin. And so the more melanin you have or the more pigment you have in your skin, the less vitamin D your body synthesizes in response to the sun. And so you would be surprised how many Black and brown individuals in our nation are vitamin D either insufficient or deficient, and that can really contribute to disease progression. And so we look, you know, at the scientific level, we look at how vitamin D treatments can affect cancer cell growth. And then we're also looking into clinical trials where if you have men that maybe have a less aggressive prostate cancer, that if you supplement them with vitamin D, will that prevent the cancer turning into something that's more aggressive and more fast growing? We also have another study going on where I don't want to get too technical, but we're looking at something called advanced glycation end product. The short word for that is AGES. And with the AGES, that's basically a component that is produced in meats when you cook it a long time. And so if you have a diet that's high in, you know, grilled meats, fried meats, that can increase your AGES that are circulating in your body. And we're looking to see if there's a difference in how many AGES are circulating and your likelihood of getting aggressive prostate cancer. So that's a few of diet and lifestyle issues that we look at. And then we also look at socioeconomic reasons that cancer health disparities exist. And so we look at income, education, what neighborhood you live in. And we really hit the pavement with that. We have a community-based prostate cancer screening with City of Hope, where we go into the community, we provide free prostate cancer education and screening on the spot. But we also collect data where we will be able to go back and look and see, are there socioeconomic factors? And then finally, at the Division of Health Equities, we also look at environmental conditions that contribute to cancer health disparities in general. You know, City of Hope is located in Southern California. We're not known for having the best air quality. And so depending on what neighborhood you live in, your chances of getting lung cancer or other cancers can be increased. So that's something that we're actively looking at as well.
Based on your research, what are some efforts that healthcare providers should make to address health disparities in Black men, specifically in terms of prostate cancer?
So my number one thing that I would say for healthcare providers is to make sure that you're up to date on current screening recommendations. So we had a publication come out 3 years ago where we found that 54% of Black men their physicians had never discussed prostate cancer screening with them. So that's alarming because this is the group of people who are at highest risk for prostate cancer, and they're walking into their doctor's offices and not even having that conversation. What was more disturbing is that when we tested the blood of these men, that a third of them had elevated PSA. So that's a lot of men who were literally walking into the doctor's office with a biomarker that could mean they have prostate cancer. And then on top of that, they haven't had discussion. U.S. Preventive Services Task Force currently recommends that men discuss with their physicians about screening between age 55 and 69. They don't have a separate recommendation for Black men, but they do recognize that they're at higher risk. So if we look at American Cancer Society and Prostate Cancer Foundation, they recommend that Black men are screened at age 45 or even age 40 if they have extensive family history, because prostate cancer is very hereditary, just how breast cancer is. So I would say, first of all, just to make sure that physicians are following current screening recommendations, and if they have a patient that is adamant that they want to be screened, to provide that, because we see a lot of men in the community where, you know, they ask their doctor for a screening and the doctor will just say no and then they leave it at that. And so that's something that patients should be able to advocate for themselves, especially if it's something that insurance is covering. Another thing that we've got going on at City of Hope is we have formed a new alliance with Genentech. It's called AirSight Alliance. And we are actively trying to increase representation of underrepresented populations, so Blacks or Latinos, in clinical trials. We really want to be able to offer the most cutting edge treatments that we have available to populations who are at the highest risk of having worse outcomes.
Can you just explain for our audience who is typically at high risk for prostate cancer, why they are high risk, and what they can do to address their risk?
So cancer in general is a disease of age. As you get older, you know, your chances of getting cancer increase. But we also know that it's very genetics driven. So when you put all that together, obviously, so you want to get screened as you get older. But certainly if you have family history, prostate cancer with your brothers, your dads, your uncles, your chance of being diagnosed with prostate cancer goes up. And that also translates to breast cancer. So if your mom had breast cancer or your aunt, then your risk of prostate cancer is actually higher. And so you want to pursue screening sooner rather than later in that setting as well. If you are an African American, your chance of being diagnosed is much higher. And also if you are Latino and you happen to know your family history and you have more African ancestry, then your chances of being diagnosed would be higher.
I know that you yourself are a cancer survivor. Can you tell me a bit about your own cancer journey?
Yeah, so I have been in remission for 5 years, so I'm pretty excited about that. But while I was a doctoral student, so I was pursuing my PhD at Loma Linda, I started to develop symptoms that seemed like it was bronchitis. So I started getting low-grade fevers for a few months, and I would just say, oh, I'm tired or I'm stressed or whatever, you know, oh, I'm fighting a cold. And then it started to turn into like a bronchitis cough. So I thought. And so I went to the doctor actually 6 different times and was prescribed antibiotics and inhalers. But the thing with the type of cancer I was ultimately diagnosed with, which is stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma, is it's not a very common cancer. And so it's not something necessarily your doctor would just be on the lookout for. And so I ended up being diagnosed when I ended up in the emergency room because I was having chest pain that had developed over a few days. Every morning I was waking up with chest pain. And so I went to the ER because my husband and my mom were begging me to get that checked out. And when I went, they, you know, did a CT scan, and then they found that I had a mass in my chest that was 8.5 centimeters. So it's like the size of my fist just sitting in my chest, which is will definitely explain chest pain when you're waking up. So at first, when I found that, they thought that perhaps I was stage 2, but after doing a PET scan, then they saw, you know, it had metastasized to both lungs and the sides of my neck and armpits. And so they just pursued the most aggressive treatment. So that was 6 months of chemo. And I did have a major surgery involved with that. So I took 9 months off of school total and then returned after that. But it certainly gave me a different outlook on cancer treatments for the patient, cancer care for patients, how cancer affects like the whole family. It's not just the individual, and also survivorship, because a lot of times you feel like, oh, you know, you've been cured, so that part of your life is over, and you don't realize, you know, you're an oncology patient like a long time after that. You still have scans, you still have blood work, every symptom you get after that, which may not have been a big deal before, you know, suddenly becomes, oh gosh, we need to do a scan and make sure it's not something worse than what we're thinking, especially because the fact that mine was diagnosed at stage 4 means that I was walking around with symptoms. I was just kind of ignoring them, which is exactly what I tell people not to do, you know, now currently. And so it does give me something to be able to relate to individuals when I am in the community. I can't tell you how many times I hear men say, well, I don't know that I need to be screened. Like, I feel fine, you know, and I let them know, you know, my dad felt totally fine. He found out he had prostate cancer on accident in the emergency room, that something completely unrelated to prostate cancer. And even with myself, you know, it's not like you go to sleep one night and then you wake up the next morning with cancer. It's something that happens over time. And so you just kind of get used to the symptoms, you brush them under the rug, you just keep pushing. A lot of times it's not till your loved ones, you know, kind of pull your coattail and let you know, you know, you're not the same person you were a couple months ago. Something's going on. I used to approach drug development and treatments, you know, from a purely scientific angle. And then after I was sick, I was like, all I think about is the side effect. And as opposed to thinking, how can we combine all these things that we think would kill a cancer? So you really want to try to get the most bang for your buck and see how can you cure cancer with the least amount of combining all of these therapies, because that takes a toll for sure. And also, you know, looking at a holistic approach to treating cancer made me think about what kind of support you have. You know, if you're a religious person, do you have, you know, faith support? Do you have dietary support? And those are things that we, you know, provide at City of Hope for patients that make a big difference beyond the drug that you're taking for sure. And then also before I got sick, you know, I thought hospitals were super cool. You know, oh, you I know for myself, I get a little bit of PTSD when I walk in and I smell ethanol and I see the environment. When I was sitting in intensive care unit at 35 and I was with a whole lot of other patients that were in their 80s, and I'm like, I'm too young for this, but you're not, you know, you're not above the law when it comes to health, even if you do everything right. So as a patient, if you feel like you know, I get enough sleep, I eat really well, you would be shocked at how sometimes people place blame on a cancer patient. I'm like, you must have done something to get that. Well, we really have to recognize that even if you do everything right, you still can get cancer. And you still want to stay on top of your screenings and your doctor's appointments. And even in the midst of COVID, you know, we know that screening rates went down. You know, time will tell how that affects people showing up to the clinic with more advanced stages and metastasis. And so now that the world is slowly opening back up, on the top of your priority should be making sure that you're up to date with your screenings.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.